You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast. This episode is made possible by Bicycle, the leading global marketplace for pre-owned bikes.
Well, hello and welcome to yet another Arrivé from the Cycling Podcast Feminin. My name is Rose Manley and today we are, of course, talking about the last Ardennes Classic of the season, Liège-Bastogne-Liège-Femmes. Now, thankfully, I'm not alone. I should actually say before we go any further, don't listen if you don't know what happened. I say this every time, but we will not be your friends if you don't know what happened in this race because we will be spoiling it for you hugely. And doing that with me is Rebecca Charlton. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, hello. Great to be back.
And great to be back, which I know is your parents' pet peeve when you say that. So I'm glad you went straight
in
there.
It's become such a habit. I'm going to have to come up with a new one-liner so that you know that I am happy to be here, but without saying it explicitly.
Yeah, now I'm not even sure that it's genuine anymore. But you should be happy to be back because it has been so thrilling. And actually, these three Ardennes Classics that we've had this week have been so full of surprises, haven't they?
So full of surprises. And of course, for me, you know, a lot of happiness.
Yes.
You know how much I've wanted the win for New Vedoma. But no, it has been unpredictable. As much as we always say we want races to be that way, it truly has provided that action this week, not least today with Liège. I, as you know, last time I came on the Arrivé podcast after Paris-Roubaix, I was very emotional. But today,
yes.
I think I just stopped breathing for the last kilometre. I think that's how I'd sum up how that went for me. And you realise you haven't actually taken a breath. I don't know if you felt the same, but it was one of those scenarios where I was like, okay, it's definitely New Vedoma's. Okay, now it's definitely this, definitely that. Okay, now go. And I kept changing within that and I'm desperately looking to see, has it gone past 250 metres to go yet? Because that dynamic of who I would have put money on at that point just changed and changed and changed. I was utterly thrilled by that final.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? Because normally when these kind of classics come down to a sprint, people feel a little bit... You feel a little bit cheated because you do kind of want all the fireworks to be on those climbs and that's kind of really gutsy rides. You kind of want that. So when it does come down to what looks like is going to be a sprint finale, you'll be like, even from a small group, you'll be like, but actually this just packed a punch in every single last meter, packed a punch. And before I go any further, I will give everyone a little recap of what happened right from the top of the race. So we're all on the same page. And that was that Sarah Gigante actually made the first notable attack with a whole 133 kilometres still to ride, which seems like utter madness to me, building a lead that topped 3 minutes on the rest. 50 kilometres later, and Gigante was still out front. Elise Chabet attacked the pack and brought several others with her, including Misha Bredewald, Kim Kadzau, Lucinda Brand, Ava Van Acht, Michaela Harvey, Flora Perkins and Grace Brown. By the Col de Rosier, Gigante was caught to create a mega power group of nine who arrived at the foot of La Redoute with 2:30 in hand. Onto the famous climb and Brown took the lead with a pace that splintered the breakaway, eventually frittering away all but Chabet and Kadzau. Back in the pack, Lidl Trek and SD Works began their efforts to bring the escape back, bringing the gap back to within a minute. By the Côte de la Rochefoucauld, it was here that Elisa Longo-Borghini made her attack with Vollering, Voss and Nibiodoma in her wheel. Voss couldn't take the pace, though, and swung away to leave Longo-Borghini, Vollering and Nibiodoma. That trio caught the trio ahead with 8.8 kilometres to go to become six. Eventually, that is, after a bit of Vollering Nibiodoma gameplay. A Longo-Borghini attack briefly split the group further, compounded by Brown locking up on a roundabout. But they were all together coming into the finale. Nibiodoma's attack in the last kilometre could only be matched by Longo-Borghini. But as the sprints open up in the last few hundred metres, it was Brown who had the legs, taking the win from Longo-Borghini and a charging Demi Vollering. And, well, what a win for Grace Brown and what this will mean for her, because, she hasn't been without wins. Actually, I was like looking back at her recent wins, but all her recent wins have been in time trials and time trial stages only. So there was the, Australian Nationals time trial, which she won this year. There was the Tour of Scandinavia time trial last year. There was a ladies tour time trial, which she won. And the last kind of non-time trial win was actually the Tour Down Under last year. So that's kind of over a year without, you know, with plenty of wins, but not wins from racing situations. And I was starting to think that maybe people kind of got a little bit wise to what Grace Brown can do. And perhaps her earlier wins that she had in kind of those road racing scenarios came from the fact that she was a bit of a surprise package and people didn't know what to suspect, what to expect from her. But, you know, here she proved that she had the legs, the sprint, the climb, the breakaway prowess. She had everything, didn't she, Becca?
Everything, and everything against the odds. And I know we'll dive into that. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, we like to do that little reminder for ourselves and look back through the Paunares and the results. And I think talking about Tour Down Under, that was the first race that I, well, season opener, that I was commentating on this year. And I think I felt there was a lot of pressure on her with the number one on her back to come in. They were explicitly saying that they were riding for Grace Brown. And she openly said, I just haven't got the legs. For whatever reason that was, she'd come in as, you know, team leader. And then that sort of, as we know, switched during the race. And she communicated to Cecily Uchoa, big, you know, I just don't have it today. You go for it. And I think that must be really hard, actually, to kind of take stock of that and be philosophical about it. So I think actually coming into today and taking that victory, it would have, as you say, meant a tremendous amount. But I think when we dive into the scenario in which she won, there were several times after being in that break for so long with that ultimate fatigue, how strong she'd been powering up. You know, so many of those climbs at pivotal moments. I just thought, you know, when those three catch, this group looks like it's done. They must be so, so fatigued. But then to do the amount of drilling to come back, and you touched upon that roundabout. I mean, I guess it was, I don't know, what do you think? Do you think it was the element of that kind of combination of wet and dry road? Because it just looked like she absolutely upended the bike, didn't it? But to recover that, and I wonder what went through her mind at that point, because I certainly wouldn't have said, okay, she still has the win in her at this point. So I wonder if you'd asked her, okay, do you think you could still take this, whether she would have said yes. But there must have been a big part in her mind that kept believing. So for me, it was, again, it was against the odds to come back and back and just believe in that victory. And the dominance she had on that finish line with that amount of fatigue just shows what she can do. And just strength, strong, I think that was the word for her performance today.
She definitely had the best legs, didn't she? It wasn't like, oh, she played, you know, obviously she played it tactically well, but it wasn't like, oh, she was just relying on teammates and tactics to kind of find a way to the win. She just had the strongest legs because, I mean, the fact that she was on La Redoute and she was the person at the front of that breakaway group. She was the rider that was forcing the pace, that was meant that all of the other riders couldn't keep up, and then it became that kind of group of three in the breakaway. That was because of the pace that she was setting even at that stage. And then, like you said, Becca, you know, she kept on in times when you thought that they must be done, or they must be looking behind and seeing, you know, that the group behind is only kind of 15 seconds and want to just sit up and give up. That's because I'm not a pro cyclist. I always think, oh, I would have given up at that point.
We always think this.
Yeah, I definitely would have given up several times if I'd been Grace Brown today. But yeah, a remarkable amount of work and effort that she had to put in the closing kilometres just to come back from that little slip up on the roundabout as well. And just huge amount of patience and confidence in that finale to not just jump when Kashanivia Doma jumped, and not also be fearful of Demi Vollering. Sometimes we see riders who just, all they want to do is watch Demi Vollering and stay on her wheel and think that if I can just get around Demi Vollering, then I've got the win. But she kind of just went for herself and saw the opportunity. But we know that Liège-Bastogne-Liège is her race, isn't it? Because she's come second in 2020, she came second in 2022. And actually looking back on those races, it's so interesting to see the progression that she's made since 2020, because in 2020, I don't know if people can remember, but Lizzie Dignan was off Solo kind of made the difference on La Redoute. And then it was on Rochefoucauld that Grace Brown then went off in pursuit and kind of cut down Lizzie Dignan's advantage from about a minute to about 10 seconds or something by the finish line. And then in 2022, it was kind of a bit more of a, she won the sprint. She was kind of the best of the rest with Annemiek van Vleuten kind of soloing there. So I think it's kind of like she put the sort of climbing nous and know-how from that 2020 second place in with the sort of sprinting know-how that she would have gained from that 2022 race and then has come away with the win today, but also a huge opportunity and a huge day for FDJ Suez as well, who are not a team that we necessarily mention as being the team to be watching in these races.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think looking at the amount of TT results that she's got under her belt, I mean, that's essentially what she did to get back, wasn't it? Having been in that break, she then used that TT prowess to ride back on. And you're right, she did play it tactically to perfection towards the end and, well, throughout the whole race. But what really got me was that if it had been another rider, I would have probably said, you've burnt too many matches. You have not wasted energy, because it was necessary to get back, but expended a hell of a lot of energy to get back. Would you then have it in your legs in the end, in the final? And she did. And like you say, she's done these storming rides before and it's turned a lot of heads. And it's perhaps the fact that we've forgotten that she can actually do that. And she's done that today.
Yeah, and we should also give a big mention to some of her breakaway companions there. I mean, Elise Chabé was so, so powerful. And obviously, in the closing kilometres was beginning to then do a job for Cassie Nieuwiedoma, or at least they were trying to play the Canyon-SRAM tactics towards the end. But she also looked like she had some of the best legs out there. And Kim Kadsow, who's an EF rider, we actually heard a bit about her in our New Zealand mini feature that we did at the top of the year, because she came through that Black Magic Women development squad. And I remember hearing about her having a bit of a light bulb moment about, wow, I could actually be a professional cyclist. And look what she's doing now.
Yeah, and I think there was a moment where our friend Marty on the Eurosport commentary said, okay, we've got some of the big favourites that you would definitely put down on paper as favourites coming up to that trio who's been in the break all day. Can they get on this group? Will they still be there at the finish? And in my mind, again, I know I've said it a couple of times, but I honestly thought that they were done for the day. But then, as you've mentioned, to see those other two riders, we've talked about Grace Brown's thrilling win, but these other two riders, to be there and be there and be there and come back and perform those roles. And Chabé, like you say, performing that role for Nieuwiedoma, I thought was just staggering, really. And again, another reminder of how I think sometimes Elise Chabé is underestimated. When you look through her results, she's just there and there and there, not only as an individual riding for teammates, performing so many roles, and also still being up there herself. And I think, yeah, we were again reminded of that today, because she perhaps shouldn't have been there right towards the end, but she was more than there. And that was really exciting. But Kim Kadsow, I mean, every time she was just back and back, and she had to go off road when Grace Brown came off, well, didn't come off, almost came off and saved it. And then she had to do a save and come across the grass. So she could have been thinking at that point, right, there's just too much that hasn't gone my way today. But she was still there. And I've, as you know, I like to do, looked up some fun facts.
Well, I can't believe it's taken this long to get that. I was trying to set you up in the first place, Becca, just for you to do a little, you know, a home run with your fun facts.
Yeah,
you've been tiptoeing around.
She's not even going to analyse. She's just going to go in with it. It's okay. So I've got a quote here from the Global Cycling Network, who've done an article and an interview with Kim Kadsow. And I love this quote. Okay. Yes, I did work on a salmon fishing farm. And this is the bit I love, I just want to clarify, this has no connection to Jonas Vingegaard. We are not salmon fish buddies.
I love that. That is what everyone was thinking, though, wasn't it? Let's be truthful.
In case you were thinking, well, of course, her and Jonas do in fact know each other through salmon fishing. They don't.
They don't.
So I know that will surprise you, Rose.
Wow.
But she has also trained as a sous chef at the age of 17. She's been a lifeguard a barista, and she's worked at Domino's. Oh, she's also been a landscaper and, of course, now a pro cyclist.
I feel like a lot of these jobs could be, she could run a kind of, she could run like a salmon farm, and then she obviously cooks the salmon as a sous chef. Has obviously it has coffees in this restaurant, which is the barista job. And then what else was there?
So sous chef, lifeguard, barista,
The lifeguard has got to be there for the fish farm in case someone falls in. It all kind of sets up this wonderful Kim Kadzow, you know, cafe farm, farm to table type place. This is fantastic. But maybe she won't be doing that because, you know, I think this has shown such promise from her cycling. And she has shown a lot of promise before, of course. I think she caught my attention last year at the Tour of Scandinavia when she finished on, I think it was stage two. She finished third, but, you know, she was coming third against Cecily Uttrup Ludwig, you know, home favourite in that race, and Annemiek van Vleuten. And, you know, for her to come third there really, I think, you know, caught a lot of people's attention. But yeah, she shows a huge amount of promise. And the fact that she was hanging in there, not only was she in the breakaway with, you know, Grace Brown and others, but she had actually before that done about a 20K effort to try and get over to Sarah Gigante, who was the solo breakaway right at the beginning. So she'd already put in an extra 20 kilometres of breakaway time on all of her breakaway companions that were there in the finale. Quite phenomenal.
Yeah, it really was a phenomenal ride. And as I say, every time I thought she wasn't there anymore, she was back. And I think at the end as well, I had really high hopes for her in that finish. But yeah, she did phenomenally. And I think you're sadly going to have to wait until her retirement for the combination of the, you know, the resort, the fishing farm, the lifeguarding and the coffee.
You're listening to Arrivé by The Cycling Podcast. This episode is made possible by Bicycle, the leading global marketplace for pre-owned bikes.
A big thank you to Bicycle for sponsoring our series of Arrivé episodes this spring. Bicycle.com is the website, and you can download the app onto your phone as well by searching for Bicycle, and you'll quickly see why it's becoming the place to buy or sell a bike online. Perhaps you're looking to buy a secondhand bike. Well, Bicycle is the place to start looking, and with more than 15,000 bikes listed for sale at any one time, it's very likely that you'll find what you're looking for, because there's all manner of bikes on there: road bikes, gravel bikes, mountain bikes, triathlon bikes, if that's your thing, and there are price points to match every wallet, and you can find a bike that's been lightly used or something that's been really well loved, and the price will reflect the condition of the bike, because Bicycle offers buyers and sellers a range of protections to ensure that the sale goes through exactly as everyone intends. And it starts really with the sellers being accountable for describing the bike's condition and age and all of the components accurately. They're also responsible for honouring the sale terms and shipping the bike in a timely manner. So if you are buying, you're not going to be left hanging around waiting, and you know that your money is securely held by Bicycle until the transaction is completed to everybody's satisfaction. And if you are buying, well, you can also look at some of the refurbished bikes that are listed on Bicycle and know that they come with a 2-year warranty. So you can ride without any worry once your bike arrives, as good as new, really. Go and have a look at bicycle.com now. And for a limited time, if you are looking to sell a bike, you can do so without incurring the seller's fee. Now, it's free to list a bike on bicycle.com, and very easy too. You just go through the simple steps. You upload 3 photos of your bike to make sure it looks its best. And normally, Bicycle takes a nominal seller's fee when the bike sells. But Cycling Podcast listeners, for a limited time, can use the code TCP24, and there will be no seller's fee deducted from the sale. So if you're looking to sell a bike, or perhaps you're in the market for a different bike for the summer, go to bicycle.com. Now it's back to the rest of our coverage of the women's edition of Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Now, Becca, we really haven't spoken much, actually, about Canyon SRAM and what a kind of assured team performance they put out today. Obviously, Kashanee Viadoma winning at Flèche Wallonne. I think that gave them maybe a bit of a confidence boost, perhaps. But, you know, they had numbers in that final six. They had Nibali Viadoma and Chabé. They had Chabé, obviously, in the early break all day. And then behind that, even in the Voss group that looked like it was trying to come back at one point, they had Bauernfeind and Bradbury. So they were kind of all day able to just sit back and let the other teams do the work.
Yeah, in my mind, they played it so, so well today. And I know it would be easy to criticise because they didn't walk away with the victory. But actually, I think they did. I really do think they did everything that they could do. And they did it right, in my opinion. And I think confidence breeds confidence. We know that. But you really saw the tell of that. And I think the way that Nibali Viadoma just put everything into trying what she knew was the only way she could win. She couldn't have done anything else. And the way she went for me just showed the confidence carried on from the win at Flèche Wallonne. And I loved seeing that because you saw that fire and she really believed it. And I did think it was going to pay off. I thought at one point she really had it sealed. And that's when I was desperately looking for like how many meters were remaining to go. Because, you know, she'd be such a popular winner taking that on the back of that previous victory. But of course, you know, we were all really delighted for Grace Brown. But I do think that as a team, they had the strength in numbers. They played it so, so well. And they were thrilling to watch.
Yeah, they really were. And what I thought was so smart was getting a rider like Elise Chabé in the front. It wasn't like just trying to get any rider that they could in the front. Just, I think that sometimes happens, you know, SD Works, you know, thinking that they got Misha Braderwald, who is a phenomenal sprinter. And she was kind of in that front group. But realistically, she's not going to be able to stay out there for as long as someone like Elise Chabé. And then when she comes back, yeah, she can, like she did today, Misha Braderwald did a bit of a kind of pull at the front to kind of try and bring the break back, help Pellisson bring the break back. But apart from that, can't really be a player in those kind of final climbs, on those final kilometres. So I thought it was just so, you know, canny of Canyon SRAM to really stack their field with these phenomenal, versatile climbing riders like Elise Chabé. You know, Elise Chabé could have won as well as Kashanee Viadoma could have won. I mean, Elise Chabé actually beat Kashanee Viadoma in the end. Elise Chabé finishing fourth, Kashanee Viadoma finishing fifth at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. But yeah, phenomenal tactical nous from them to have the numbers in a way that we haven't really seen any rider, any team outside of SD Works and Lidl Trek have the numbers in a race this season.
Well, that's thank you for setting that one up for my next point, because that's where I was going to go with it. I mean, all of last year, you took out all the quotes of us saying, come on, we need an answer to SD Works dominance. Yeah, I think there's a danger that we take away from just how brilliant SD Works were last year. I mean, they were just spectacular. But as we do, we want to shake it up. We want to see people answer that. And we kept begging for it. And that is what we're seeing play out this season, not least with Canyon SRAM today. They were spectacular in doing that.
Yeah. And we should actually talk about SD Works because, you know, last year, you know, not only were they dominant everywhere across the classics, but of course, Demi Vollering got the Ardennes triple crown. She won Amstel, she won Flèche Wallonne, she won Liège-Bastogne-Liège. And, you know, this year we've seen those three wins go to three very different riders, three very different teams, really. And, you know, SD Works has actually come away with it without a win, which, you know, is quite surprising, really, because I think, you know, everyone is always fearful to see Demi Vollering, to see Team SD Works line up at these classic races. But, yeah, to not get the win, they're surely going to be a bit disappointed with that. That Becca, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they absolutely will be. But I think there's a couple of different dynamics at play there. And I think we really saw today the fact that, and you mentioned it earlier, people weren't just waiting and following the likes of Vollering. There wasn't that sense that was the order of the day at all. And we didn't know. We just didn't know. Whereas I think obviously last season, we came in again to this year, seeing what they did, saying, well, yeah, they're just going to be dominant. And that hasn't been the case. I think Vollering, if you just looked at her face in comparison to, for example, Longo Borghini, she was suffering and she was showing the open mouth suffering out and out. So she, I mean, I was going to say, you know, she looked like she was on the back foot at points, but come on, look where she finished. She can still pull that out of the bag. But I also wonder, I mean, specifically talking about Vollering now rather than the whole of SD Works, I wonder how she's viewing the season, because, you know, she was very dominant earlier on and in 2023, and she was able to just pull win after win after win. But this is a long season, and I'm going to say it, sorry, in terms of it being an Olympic year. She's got her eye on huge, huge targets. And I know that she's been at altitude camp about a month ago. And you've got to look at reacclimatizing and taking a bit of time to actually see the benefit of an altitude camp. And I wonder if her long view of the season is why we're not seeing her target this early point in the year like we did.
Yeah, and these climbs aren't the same as kind of big alpine passes or Alpe d'Huez, which is what we're seeing later on in the year. You know, these are kind of much shorter, punchier efforts. They're not kind of sustained efforts over, you know, tens of minutes. So, yeah, it could be that. I mean, I think that it's also just that once they started looking like they weren't untouchable, then they kind of lost quite a bit of their sort of mystique. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but I think they have a lot of power and influence in the peloton that goes beyond actually how strong their riders' legs are on the day. I mean, people are kind of fearful if you've got an SD Works rider in your group. You're kind of torn. You don't know whether you should be working with them, whether you should be cajoling them into doing the work, whether you should be just sitting back. You know, it puts people in a very nervous state because, you know, SD Works, they tend to not play the games like all the other teams play. You know, if they don't have a rider in their break, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be doing the chasing, whereas ordinarily that, you know, that the kind of onus is on the team that doesn't have a rider in the break to do the chasing. So I think that a little bit what we've seen is they lost a little bit of that kind of fear that they put on the other riders in the peloton, and kind of they seem defeatable, which they are.
Psychology is huge, isn't it? It's absolutely huge, because we've talked about that element of, okay, so you've got a big hitter from SD Works here. Okay, that affects how you ride ultimately, because you know, if you're going on the back of how they were last season, for example, that they're going to be going for the victory and they're going to be strength in numbers. They're going to be really dominant. So you're going to play your cards in perhaps a different way. I know we like to also say what we would do if we were in that position. And
mine would always be just give up after about...
Obviously, we wouldn't be in the race by this point, though. We'd have given up.
No. We would be sitting, having opening up the Prosecco on the side of the road, probably. But
that we'd bought ourselves from Lidl, because we wouldn't have won it on the podium. But if, you know, that sort of factor of someone with the status in the peloton like Vollering has, if she was asking me to come through and I was a younger or less experienced rider, I would pull for her, because they do have that stature and that clout. But like you touched upon, you've got to see it to believe it. And once there's a crack, and once there's a changing at the top of the rankings, and somebody else takes a victory, and somebody else then takes a surprise victory, you do believe that you can topple the dominance. And that's another element, I think, of what we've seen early season.
But it's also, I guess, not just that they... You know, not to counteract my own point, but it isn't just that they seem like they're not going to win every time, but it's also like, well, who, you know, it could be anyone that wins. You know, your riders now have to mark everybody, because it could be a Canyon SRAM rider because they look so strong, or don't forget about Voss, or, you know, FDJ come up with a really strong result today, or Lidl Trek have just been amazing all season. There's just too many cards to play. You can't just be focused on one team anymore. You have to be watching all of them. But it was interesting because you mentioned it, Becca, briefly, that obviously Vollering seemed to have a lot to give at the end. She actually was really charging for the line. She did end up with third today. And she seemed like, if the line had been 50 meters more, that she would have would have got it. But perhaps that is a little bit of a confidence thing, or like you say, because of the altitude camp, perhaps she's lost a little bit of that immediate acceleration. And I think we have seen that a bit, like on Rochefort-Con when Elisa Longo-Borghini went. In days of old, we would have seen Demi Vollering jump on that wheel immediately and then just be really poker face, you know, behind Elisa Longo-Borghini, who's kind of put in a big effort. But we didn't see that. It was kind of, we're seeing the acceleration go and then Vollering having to slowly climb back, slowly bring that back. We saw that at Flesh Wallon in the week, actually, when a few of the kind of breakaways went or attacks went. She had to do it slightly more at her own pace as opposed to having that kind of punchy factor. But, you know, it does make for really engaging, exciting racing, like we saw at Liège-Bastogne-Liège today.
Yeah, it's a really good observation because she's getting there. She's absolutely still got that capability to get back on, but it's not as immediate. It's not as sharp. She's not jumping straight on it, making it look absolutely effortless, which she was before. But I wonder, and I think the reason I've kind of speculated on how the season looks for her is because I don't know about you, but she doesn't, in some races, seem to have that absolute hunger of absolute do or die. Like, I have to get this win. This means everything. She seems a little bit more measured to me, that perhaps not every race is the be all and end all, and actually she's got a longer view. I just wonder because, yeah, at points we saw Longo-Borghini looking comfortable with her suffering, but then she was still there. So I just wonder if that hunger to take every single win maybe isn't her priority. I might be completely wrong, but I just think it's we're just seeing a slightly different, I guess, just
slightly
a
slightly more measured type. Yeah, it is a slightly different Demi. And we're saying all of this, you know, saying, oh, you know, what's she doing? You know, poor Demi. But actually, she did come away. She has come away with a second and a third place this week.
Shows what we think of her as an athlete. You know, she's been absolutely untouchable. So, of course, you know, we have all these analytics and she's still on the podium. So she's not exactly going far wrong. But, yeah, I just wonder if that absolute drive to have to win in some of these races hasn't been there as much as it will be for later targets this year.
Well, we shall see, won't we? I mean, it's interesting, actually. I thought when that Elisa Longo-Borghini, Demi Vollering and Kashanivia Doma group went, I thought immediately of Denny Gray, who had said at the end of our last Arrive at Flesh Wallon, I tried to make him do a bit of speculation. He was like, well, you can't look past Kashanivia Doma, Elisa Longo-Borghini and Demi Vollering. So when that three went off, I was like, hold on a minute. Denny's been having a word and these three are going to power on to the finish and go straight across, because they have been the, you know, the people, the riders that everyone is looking at this season. That three have really been phenomenal. And I think it's shown that Kashanivia Doma and Elisa Longo-Borghini's games have definitely raised a few notches also.
Completely. And that's another element that we talk about, is what's happened with X rider from predominantly SD Works. But actually, it's perhaps what's happened with the riders who were slightly below that level last year. They will come up, undoubtedly. There's a hunger there. And people have gone away over the off season and over the winter and said, like, what do we need to do? They've seen exactly what the game plans were last year from SD Works, and they've gone away and specifically worked on how on earth do we get the better of them. So, you know, these riders have come in with a real calculated plan to change the order, and they have. And that's really interesting. What did you make of the point where Vollering ended up with Nuva Doma? And Longo-Borghini then is slightly up the road and realises.
That was so interesting, wasn't it? Because that was when we had that kind of trio of Longo-Borghini, Vollering and Nuva Doma, and they were very much in sight, well, in touching distance, really, of that trio that were ahead. And Longo-Borghini kind of bridged across, and Vollering was just watching Kashanivia Doma so closely. And then her pace went right out and kind of slowed Kashanivia Doma right down. And then there was kind of quite a marked gap, wasn't there? Longo-Borghini kind of went. I thought it was a little bit odd, I think, from Demi Vollering, because I can see where it was coming from, thinking that Kashani Vidoma would have made the attack right then. But I don't think it was a good place for Kashani Vidoma to attack, knowing, you know, that she's a rider that really needs those kind of climbs, steeper the better, punchier the better. So it would have been a really unusual time for attack. But I think it's just one of those things where everybody in the peloton is looking at everyone. And everyone is kind of worried by what anyone could do. And I guess, you know, Vollering having lost out to Kashani Vidoma at La Flèche Wallonne has suddenly start seeing her as one of the biggest rivals and definitely one of the riders that was going to take away the chance of the win today.
And I hope that Kashani Vidoma is feeling that confidence, because it's been a long time coming. We've urged it for so long, and she's done so many things right, and she's had the ability, she's had the legs to be there, but everything has to go right on the day, doesn't it? And now it has. You get the sense that it has for her. And yeah, I think for me today, she looked dangerous, and she'll have looked dangerous to Vollering, which is why I think we saw that moment.
Well, it's crazy, isn't it, that the Ardennes Classics are already at the close. You've had so much excitement, so many surprises, and now we're kind of already, almost immediately, moving into stage racing, Grand Tour racing season. Because actually the next time that we're going to be speaking will be after the Vuelta Femenina, which is already going to be in just a week's time, which seems like madness. And we're going to see a lot of the same people there, as we saw Liège-Bastogne-Liège today. And then we can really find out, can't we, Becca, if Demi Vollering's altitude camp really has paid off, because that's where she's going to want to see it swinging into action. But Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed all of the Ardennes Classics as much as I did.
I really have. And I hope that my crystal ball is as effective as Den Gray's. That's all I can say in respect to my predictions on following season.
We all want to have the same crystal balls as Denny Gray. That's what we're all going for.
Note.
On that note, thank you very much, Rebecca. And thank you very much, as always, to our listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.